Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
We're back with more podcasting, aren't we?
Yeah, well, it's hard to get away.
But we're back in our respective places now.
Yeah, we're not sitting outside with the birds chirping and people walking by and taking pictures of us.
Yes, so that was really the highlight of that whole thing last week, is that not only did we do a secret podcast outside together, outside the Hammer Theater, which is where the relay event was that later that night, but we were just there during the day and got some tea and sat down on concrete, you know, place to sit, and apparently were spotted by more than one WWDC attendee and Six Colors listener/reader who did want to interrupt us because we were doing a podcast.
Sure. Yeah.
But did take a picture of us doing the secret podcast.
So that's pretty funny. It's documented. It's proved that the secret exists.
Yeah, the secret's out now. Secret's out. It's all the way out.
We'll have to go back underground. We'll have to find a new way. Secretive.
Yeah, I guess it's just a subscriber podcast now. Maybe we lost one of our S's. I don't know
if I can deal with that.
How are you getting back into the swing of things, being back home after a week of developer madness?
It's always slow reacclimating. Like, there's a lot of stuff to absorb, but it's also just about getting back into your routine and your schedule and adjusting to your sleep cycles and all that. And I always find the week after a conference to be, yeah, I get stuff done, but it's not my highlight time for doing like creative work. I definitely like sit down and do a lot of my administrative stuff, catch up on emails, schedule stuff, deal with financial things, et cetera, et cetera. It's sometimes kind of hard to get back in the swing of actually producing stuff, but it helps to have regular scheduled events like having to do podcasts,
yeah,
for example.
That's true. I did... I watched some videos. It's been nice here, summery, the last couple of days. So I was at one point, this will show you just a window into my life. I was laying in the hammock in the backyard while watching a WWDC video about dark mode.
Yeah.
This is my
comfy place to be.
That is summer, is watching developer videos while lounging outside on a warm day. That is summer to me at this point. This is my life. Yeah, I feel the same. I didn't have any jet lag, but boy, that pooped me out. That week pooped me out. I was moving really slow because I didn't go on Friday, and the weekend was like kind of recovery time and kind of finally back to normal on Monday, but definitely just a lot of interactions with people, which was great. We saw a lot of Six Colors readers, a lot of other podcast listeners. It's always really nice to see those people and to have them say nice things about the stuff that we do, because of course, during the regular course of events, we don't, right? We just put it out there into the world, and occasionally we'll see something on Twitter or something, but it's like it's not quite the same. So it was very nice to see the people, but still a lot of that, a lot of socializing, a lot of work, and a lot of trying to process the Apple announcements kind of all put together, and it's a lot to stuff into your brain in a short time.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. And even now, you know, stuff kind of dribbles out as people use the betas, as people, other of our colleagues, sort of put together, synthesize all the information they accrued last week. You know, I know you linked today to Federico's piece on shortcuts. You know, so there's everybody's doing a little bit of that processing. And so it's interesting to see, once you've moved away from the event a little bit, just the realities of all the stuff that got announced, right? Like, as opposed to sort of the, oh, there's this thing, how does it work, what does it do, does it do this, does it do that, right? Like, we spend a lot of time discussing like, oh, do you think this will work, and the answer is nobody really knows at that point. But now, a week out, there's a lot more people who actually have hands-on experience with at least some level of this stuff,
right?
So it's interesting to see how that develops.
Yeah, it's. I liked Federico's thing. You know, I think the strong implication there is that Federico talked to people who know exactly what's going on in Siri shortcuts, which would not be a surprise, given that those are probably the people who worked on workflow. But it's good. Like, there's nobody better to write that story, and so I was so happy that he was able to get that out there, and everybody can see sort of like what's going on with Siri shortcuts, and there's a lot of other stuff that's stuff that is emerging. Steve Trouton Smith is running various iOS apps on macOS because he's taken apart the method that Mojave developer preview, it's a year away from developers even supposedly being able to have this, but Steve Trouton Smith has already taken it apart and is figuring out how it ticks, which is amazing. I saw that today somebody reverse engineered the backdrop that changes over time, the file format of that, and created one. So by the time Mojave ships, there will probably be like an app that you can use to build your own time lapse backdrop kind of things. Like, everything is still, people are still learning and things are still trickling out, and that's all good.
It's interesting too. I know a lot of people have mentioned things in the betas, and people always issue the proviso like, oh, this is a beta, this could change. I think the important thing, personally, what I've taken away is, yes, stuff does change in the betas, but I feel in my experience over the last decade of iOS, a lot less changes than you might hope for. Yeah. Let's put it that way.
They sometimes do interaction tweaks. Like, yes. There might be something. This came up the other day that somebody was like, I don't think this works quite right. And it was like a little interaction detail. And I thought, that's the kind of thing that Apple does change. Is sometimes right. They're like, oh, why did we do it that way? Let's turn it back, or let's do it this different way. It does happen, but almost everything won't change.
Yeah, right. Don't expect new implementations of features, for example. I mean, there were people talking about like Memoji and saying like, Memoji doesn't have all the like face shapes, for example, or it doesn't quite work with the it doesn't like let you turn things easily into stickers or something. And it's like, that's stuff that might come down the road, but it's not probably stuff like they're not engineering new features between now and September.
Yeah, it's possible that there will be more face shapes, but that the animation pipeline, I mean, it's possible. I think you're right. It's maybe more possible that they're already doing a track to add more face shapes and stuff
in a subsequent release. Yeah.
Yeah, in a next release.
In the same way that we got more Animoji between last year's iPhone X launch and now, right?
Yeah, like, sure.
Yeah, and those are certainly easier to roll out than a lot of new features. But yeah, it's interesting to see how people, how things are set in stone or not set in stone, right? Like, and we've seen a lot of betas over the years, and we've watched the progression, and you're totally right. They do interaction tweaks. Obviously, bugs get fixed along the way. But yeah, the major changes are less common. It has to be usually something that's pretty... There has to be a really good reason for them to, like, update a feature midstream there.
Yeah.
So... Yeah.
Yeah, but it could be. I mean, we don't know. It could be that they're like, well, this is all we have now, but we'll have some more for a later beta. But we don't know. But don't ever count on it, because mostly it's not.
Right. I mean, the exception to that, I would say, is stuff that's linked to new hardware, right? Like if new iPhone coming down the pipe in September
sure.
has a particular feature that requires new software, absolutely. There is something we are not seeing there yet. But
of course.
Yeah, a lot of the other stuff, not so much.
It's mostly it is mostly tweaking interactions and fixing bugs. So it's things like, oh, if you swipe on this, it does this weird thing. You're right. That's probably not the right way to do it. And you can do that. But
right. Or I've seen people say their GPS is not working great in the current beta. Or sure. Well, like, that'll get fixed.
That's a bug. Yeah. I've definitely seen some people complaining about things like, I can't believe it doesn't do this thing. It's like, dude, it's a developer beta. Like, hang on. Just hang on. Maybe you'll get there. But that's fine. I mean, there's things that are totally busted in there, and they're going to fix those. They're totally going to fix those.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of the one that I wonder about, and it's not in the beta now, and I don't know if it will be in the final or not, but it sounds like it's something that Apple is working on. Is something that I mentioned on Upgrade this week, and I've heard somebody on Twitter pointed out that somebody in the WebKit team mentioned this as well. Is the idea that as somebody who has a website, I would really like it if I could set a set of styles that kick in when a computer is in dark mode. And Windows has a dark mode too, right? So like you could have this even be broader, but the idea of having this kind of understanding that when a device is in a dark mode, that the styles change. Because I would like my site, because six colors is white background, right? I would like to not be a jerk to people who want to run in dark mode. Like, if I could say, oh, you're in dark mode. Well, then the background is black and the text is white, and invert colors, as the session that I was watching in the hammock pointed out, invert colors is not dark mode, right? It's not the same thing. And I would love to be able to do that as a CSS extension, to be able to say my website is in dark mode now too. And I think that will probably happen. And maybe the holdup is there's a question about whether Apple wants to run something out that is entirely proprietary, or if they want to actually contact a standards body or some other vendors and see about rolling something out. Usually what ends up happening is they roll out a WebKit style, and then a year later, there's a real style that you use instead of the WebKit style, which you use in the meantime. But anyway, I would love that. It's not in there right now, but I had that thought. And that's an example of something that it's possible that could come in the final, or it could come in an update down the road. But that I hadn't thought about that until I got home and I was sitting,
actually
launching Mojave
had been talking to people about it too, about just that, actually, was whether or not that was thing. Because somebody, I think in one of our, maybe in the Six Color member Slack, said that they loaded some website and it like showed up weird in dark mode in the beta. And I got starting thinking down that track of like, is there a CSS style? Could you do that? And the answer is yes, it would require some work from Apple. And obviously it requires, you know, all the web designers who want to take advantage of it to work on it. So it's not going to be a universal fix, because not everybody's going to spend their time to develop that. But it's great that if you have the option to do it and you want to do it, that you can do it, would be really nice.
And in the long run, if you had the ability to essentially on the web have a few different color palettes that are available based on the status of the device, and it was more broad and part of a standard, I think that would be really cool. The fact that you're going to have this, presumably there'll be a dark mode in iOS at some point as well. Having everything kind of like adapt based on the status of the device, that sounds good to me in the long run.
Some people already have this manually. I'm thinking of like Ars Technica lets you switch between white on black, black on white, and other sites let you do that too. All you need to do is make it automatic in some way. So that'd be cool. Yeah. That's definitely one thing that I was looking at Stephen Hackett's delve into dark mode.
Yeah.
And it is fascinating to see, like, he shows the Mail app at one point and he's like, yeah, so all the Mail Chrome is dark and everything, and then you open like a new message window and the new message window is just white. And I was like,
so my understanding, and I don't know if this was something that I got last week. My understanding is was that in the demo, or maybe that was in the dark mode session at WWDC, that Mail is an example where, like, for certain content areas, apps can, instead of it's like a best practice, instead of just forcing into dark mode, they said there's some context where what you want to do is make it a preference. So I think you can compose a new Mail message in Mojave and have a preference that those be in dark mode, but it's not automatic that they're going to have you compose in dark mode. That there are certain circumstances where the app developer can say, well, for this, I'm not going to change the look without your permission. Right. And for other things, I will. So like the sidebar will change without your permission, but the content space, I'm going to make you say, show me this in dark mode. And that's fine.
Yeah, I agree.
It is glaring once you go in there. That's why I think it's going to be a little while before dark mode really is like what it needs to be, because you're going to have apps that don't honor it and they're going to be weird.
Yep. Yeah. It's an interesting investigation there.
One of the things that didn't, everybody's so focused on dark mode, they missed another huge thing that got added, huge, in terms of macOS appearance, which is OS X. Since the beginning, it had the blue highlight, and then you could get graphite if you were a fancy graphic designer or didn't want to see colors. And with this, they've got like eight of these accent colors.
But it's different than just the aqua and graphite thing, sort of, right? Because graphite, as Stephen pointed out, is still like, if you want any other like stoplight colors for your little widgets, like graphite's the only option. Yes. So that actually changes that. Everything else just changes, I think, the highlight color?
No.
The color in like the menus when you like mouse over.
No. See, that's the thing, is the accent color isn't the highlight color. And in fact, you in the UI, you can set the highlight color and the accent color to be different.
Yeah, I'm saying specifically, I think the accent color is like if you go to a menu, right?
No. That's the highlight color. I think.
Is it? I didn't think so. I thought the highlight color was when you highlight text.
Highlight text, but not... Why would it not also be...
You've never been able to change... Now we're gonna...
That's right, because you had your highlight color, you always could change the highlight color, but you couldn't change the
correct
accent color.
Right. So, like, the menus are always blue in, like, whenever you, like, click on a menu.
Or gray.
It's always blue or gray. Those are your only options. So now it's going to be... And I feel like this was a... Was this never a thing, or was it, like, a third-party add-on? Because I feel like I remember changing this at some point way in the distance.
It was never an official thing. So I still am confused by the distinction between the highlight color and the accent color, and I kind of think that should just be one thing.
My highlight color has always been green. So like when I highlight text in like a Word doc or even in a web browser, like the highlight color I have is green. But, you know, it's still like if I go up to the file menu and start selecting things, it always highlights stuff in blue. And I will probably change that because blue's fine. It's fine, but like green's my favorite color, so I like green. That's why I changed the highlight color. I guess I can see reasons why you might want them to be different or possibly the same, but I like the option of having them as different things, I guess. Like if you want to make something super crazy by being like, this is going to be purple and this is going to be brown, go nuts.
I guess what I'm saying is it doesn't feel very Apple-like to me that they let you choose those different things instead of just saying, instead of the highlight color, now we have an appearance color or whatever they call it.
Accent color,
and the accent color is the color of the arrows on the pop-ups, and it's also your text highlighting. And they're like,
you can make this hideous, basically, is what we're saying.
Yeah.
Was this a classic macOS option? Was that possible? Because I feel like I used to be able to change some of that stuff. I'm getting old.
Yeah, it's there have been so many different versions, but the way I'll put it is, there was a time when Apple made you be able to choose between appearance blue and appearance graphite that we all assumed that Apple would add other appearances down the road because that was kind of ridiculous that there were only two. And Apple never did. 15 years passed and Apple didn't do anything. And in Mojave, finally, they have done this thing where there's not only a black mode and a light mode, a dark mode and a light mode, but there's these eight different colors that you can choose from as your accent color.
It is weird, like you point out, because it's like, did they just decide like, oh, we've got, you know, spare cycles essentially this year, we can spend the time implementing that? Or what was the decision process that led them to thinking like, yes, now 17 years after the release of macOS 10, now is the time we will do this. It's a bizarre choice, but I'm in favor of it. Both dark mode and the accent color changes is just a peculiar decision for them to make now for no apparent reason.
I know. I don't even know. It's weird. It's weird. But yes, people should read Stephen Hackett's thing on 512 pixels. He dove deep in order
I just came across a link on Daring Fireball that I think referenced something that you and I, and I think John, were also talking about, which is that the AirPower has yet to make an appearance.
Yeah.
Almost, you know, getting to the point where the next major time they'll have to release it would be a year after they announced it. And we were kind of speculating as to, you know, what, in the words of Jerry Seinfeld, what's the deal with AirPower? But strange, because, you know, this, on the face of it, this does not seem like a thing that should have been a major undertaking, right? Like, it did require them to work with the Qi standards group and add some functionality that wasn't in there. But it's not as though we don't have wireless charging pads, you know, widely for sale, right? The amount of incremental improvement in here, at least, seemed like that should be pretty reasonable to you know, do in less than a year. And yet, it's still not out, which is odd. It's an odd move for Apple, because Apple doesn't announce stuff a year in advance unless it's like, you know, the last thing they announced a year in advance. And it wasn't even like the iPhone was like 6 months in advance, right? Mm-hmm. Like the watch was 6 months in advance.
Right.
So, you know, I have to believe they were targeting it to get released sometime in, you know, March maybe, and that something with that project is not going as expected.
I heard something second, or no, it's not even second hand, like third hand at WWDC. And the person I heard,
you and I both heard.
Yes. And the person we heard it from they weren't sure that this was true, but it was a funny moment, which was that stuff was like blowing up or catching on fire.
Right.
And, you know, you think about how this energy exchange technology works, like, it's not impossible that you would have
far more likely to happen from this kind of product than from any number of other things, right?
Right.
And we've seen stories throughout the years of smartphone batteries and other batteries catching on fire. Hence, we have mm-hmm. all these airplane restrictions now, et cetera. So none of this is implausible.
Right. So,
but it really can't happen if you're going to ship that product.
Right. Whether that story is true or not, the idea that this product, like, they got to do this right, right? They got to do it, and they're going to ship enough of them that they cannot have them have your iPhone explode or your watch or your AirPods or whatever explode when you lay them on this thing. So I get that it's a thorny problem. I think what's interesting about it is that Apple announced it.
Right.
And I think, like, maybe the HomePod, certainly like AirPlay 2, this is a case where the issue is not that it's hard to do. The issue is that Apple thought they were further along and could announce it.
Right.
And then they were wrong.
Yes.
And so that's the part that gets me, is like, they shouldn't have announced this product, but they thought they were close enough that they could do it. And
yeah,
that was a mistake.
Yeah.
Like, that was a mistake. So if you're a manager at Apple, you've got to ask, you know, you got to ask the people involved, like, why did you think this was ready to go? How do we gauge when a product is ready to go so that we don't pre-announce this stuff 6 months, 9 months before it's actually ready to go, so that we don't hit one of those. We need to be confident enough in its release. I mean, what it really does is make you understand why Apple used to kind of just never announce something if it wasn't already in channel,
right,
ready to be released.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause you don't want to get caught in one of these circumstances where it looks bad that you've announced a thing that is vaporware, right?
They never needed to do this, right? They could have said Qi charging is great. They're great Qi chargers for the phone. Yay.
Yep.
Nothing about, you know, a new AirPods case, nothing about Apple Watch, nothing about a pad that could charge things. Just let it be. But they were super confident. It was a great story to tell, but like, they had
sure.
to be super confident yeah. about that product, and that confidence seems to have been misplaced.
I was trying to think back to the last time that something like this occurred, and the most obvious example to me, and this is a slightly different situation because it is software based, but it was the open source FaceTime standard. And of course, there yeah. are many stories behind why that happened and who made that decision and when that decision was made, mm-hmm. famously by Steve Jobs, basically like right before the event.
And then some lawyer realized
yeah.
that they couldn't open source it because there were a bunch of patent things. Yeah. Oops.
Yeah. But that never, like, you're not going to come out and say that necessarily either, right? Like, you don't get up on stage next time and be like, by the way, we're not doing that because it turns out it would be illegal. And so, you know, interesting. Also, I mean, that's also one of the stories, I think, that leads into this idea of why FaceTime is only now expanding to multiple parties, which was always a weird limitation because, you know, we did have back in the iChat AV days, the ability to talk to three people at once. And at that time was kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
And then it got, you know, rolled back, presumably because of these same legal limitations and patent issues. And so they actually, like, seemingly had to go back to the drawing board and re-architect it all. And I really enjoy the fact that they just went straight to 32 people because it's ridiculous and hilarious. They could have just done four. They could have done eight, you know, like any of those things would have been like, oh, that's pretty nice. No, 32. We're going all the way to 32. Yeah. It's one more than 31, Jason. It's more. It's more.
Yeah. Why not? Why not go all the way, I say? Seems reasonable. Well, you know, thus begins our summer of busy beta.
Yeah, I'm waiting to install the beta, since the whole, I will probably wait until the first public beta to start installing stuff, if only because as someone without a developer account, it's just easier to deal with the public beta streams, which are usually, well, recently have been less behind, right? Like they've started coming like a day or two after the developer betas. So I think it's not as much of a detriment as it used to be. And there is now a, let's see, there's tvOS, iOS, and macOS. You still can't get the watchOS as a public beta. But it's a little less heavy in terms of like having to get your certificates and all that in order, finding somebody with a developer account to set you up. And, you know, the first betas are often a little wonky, so I'm okay waiting that out a little bit.
Yeah, I get you. I'm about to go travel internationally for 2 weeks. So I'd really rather not run betas.
Yep.
You know? Yep. That's not for those 2 weeks.
Sensible. Very sensible.
So I've got an extra phone that's running iOS 12, and I've got a bootable external SSD that's got Mojave on it. And then when I get back, I'll probably, you know, suck it up and do the reverse thing where I put Mojave on my main drive and have an emergency escape to the High Sierras kind of thing in case I need to do a podcast or something and it breaks all the podcast stuff.
Hypothetically but speaking.
It could happen. Like a couple years ago where it totally happened. Yeah. Well, it's good to be home.
Yeah. It's nice to be back on the East Coast.
Yeah. So next week we'll do a secret podcast. After that, who knows? Who the hell knows?
It's I guess it's a mystery.
We might take a couple weeks off. When in explaining the secret podcast to people, I have said more than once that it's weekly-ish. We try to do it weekly, but sometimes we miss, and that's how it is. But
maybe I'll just do a secret podcast. But I honestly don't even know how to. It's so secret, I don't even know how to make it happen.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. You may find a little peek behind the scenes. I don't know if you have access to this or not. There is, in the Six Colors CMS, there is a, under Six Colors, there is a secret subscriber podcast blog that is also postable. But I don't know if you have access to it.
Well. Well, fortunately, I know the person who runs our servers. So I could probably just get them to give me access to it. And I will be drunk with power.
Yeah, I guess I could do that. I guess I could give you...
I was going to go straight to Greg. I mean...
Oh, well, that's true. Does Greg even know the...
Who knows? I don't know, but he's got access to the server. So once you've got access to the mail... I had somebody delete my account once on a software package on a server that I controlled. And I was like... No. So I went into like the database and just like flipped the bits back because I was like, no, I run this server. I have admin access on this account.
Well, that is a powerful thing. Also, I just gave you access to the podcast.
All right. Now I am drunk with
power.
Now
you could post things to the Secret Subscriber podcast.
You never know. You go off to Europe, you come back, and who knows what you might find.
The key things to know, and subscribers may have noticed this, is that there's a field for episode number, but I don't use that anymore. I got tired of numbering the episodes because we never said the number.
But the number was, I don't even know what episode this is.
But the number was in there. Well, neither do I, because I stopped counting. So you just leave that blank, but you put in a title, which is just the date, because it always is, and then you put a little dumb thing in that's the description, because I try not to have it be very long, and then you paste the URL that you put the MP3 at in there, and that's it.
So easy.
So too if somebody easy, breaks in, then you can post to the podcast, too, but otherwise it's just me and Dan.
There you go.
All right. Well, I will talk to you next week before I go on my trip, but until then, goodbye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.